It all started when we went with our dad to buy a quarter of a cow worth of meat from a butcher.
That's how any good story goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is episode 296 of Bourbon Pursuit, the podcast featuring news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Coleman, and before we start today's podcast, talking about Bell Mead and Nelson's Greenbrier, here's your weekly bourbon news update. For years now, we've been talking about the tariffs between the U.S. and the European Union, going tit for tat over a trade dispute completely unrelated to alcohol, but it's been a casualty in the trade war. However, some good news is finally coming out. The United States and the European Union have agreed to temporarily suspend tariffs for the next 4 months that have been levied on billions of dollars of each other's aircraft, wine, food, bourbon, scotch, and all kinds of other products as both sides tried to find a negotiated settlement. Flavored whiskey brand Brown Sugar Bourbon has announced that they have a new owner, and that person is no other than Jamie Foxx. Foxx will guide the creative direction and lend his entrepreneurial spirit to help further the brand's expansion. Well, and here we go, another celebrity in the bourbon category. So let's go on and move on to bourbon release news. Barrelcraft Spirits has released Barrel Bourbon Batch 28. It's a blend of 10 and 11-year-old barrels from Tennessee, Kentucky, and Indiana, bottled at cash strength, which is 108.86 proof, and has a suggested price of $90. And now moving on to some Bourbon Pursuit news, because happy birthday to us, we just turned 6 years old. We're incredibly fortunate that there are a lot of listeners out there like you that want to hear more from the people behind your favorite brands. The podcast has grown immensely, and we just want to take a second to thank our sponsors, our Patreon community, and all of you loyal listeners. Thank you very, very much. For some news on the Bourbon Pursuit Private Barrel Club, we are rocking and rolling with more barrel picks. Last week, we selected 3 barrels at Bullet Distilling Company, and this week, we selected a Remus barrel from MGP, another Old Forester barrel proof. And we're also getting lined up to do some at Wild Turkey, Knob Creek, Four Roses, Ezra Brooks, and a ton more. We're going to be pushing 40 barrels selected again this year, so make sure you support the podcast, and you can get your hands on some of these single barrel selections. Plus, you get first access to the 7 new Pursuit series that'll be coming out over the next few months from places like Finger Lakes Distilling and Woodinville Whiskey Company. Just go to bourbonpursuit.com and click on the Barrel Club link. With that, enjoy today's episode, and here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. This week's idea comes from Nate Gordon, who writes me on fredminnick.com. Actually, a very, very deep message here, but the one thing I will pull out is, I wonder if you could offer some advice for loved ones in my life that see this passion in a closed-minded sense. To them, it's an excuse to drink alcohol and spend money. To me, it's an avenue to learn about all of the history, science, crafting, and fellowship. Ignoring their perspective, how do I help others understand why I care so much about this new passion? My friend Nate, I will tell you, I struggled with that as well. When I grew up in a pretty religious household that did not drink, and when I was recovering from my war demons, it was, you know, kind of thought like maybe I shouldn't be, you know, drinking wine or bourbon at all. And that was brought to my attention of like, you know, you're talented, you can do anything in the world. Why are you focusing on bourbon? But to me, it was the passion, it was the history, it was the fellowship you mentioned. That is what it's all about. And look, every family's different. Everybody's going to have their own challenges and their interpersonal relationships with the people who look at bourbon in a negative light. You know, for me, I can only give you the story that worked. And that was when I opened up and I showed the people who had that kind of negative opinion about bourbon. I opened up and I showed them the charities that I was a part of because of bourbon. Now, when they saw the hundreds of thousands and sometimes millions of dollars that we were raising for the likes of cancer charities, the Ronald McDonald House, child victims, you know, all the things that we were doing in bourbon to make a better life for people, when they saw that, they completely changed their mindset about what bourbon is. And then they suddenly started to see that, you know what? Bourbon is not just some intoxicant. It is a culture, and a culture of very good people who care about the human existence. In my 15-year career, I've seen people of all walks of life, of all economic backgrounds, of racial backgrounds, of religious beliefs. I've seen people like that everywhere sit in one room and not talk about the things that divide us. They talk about bourbon, and they talk about what bourbon means to them and what bourbon has done for their inner community. So the next time you find yourself challenged by someone in your family, just sit them down. Show them the amount of money that bourbon has raised. Show them the amount of friends that you have made that may be doctors, that may be plumbers. Maybe they are astronauts. There are actual astronauts who listen to this podcast because they love bourbon. And that's the thing. This is one of the few things that we have in life that can bring us together. And so, as that person in your family wants to pull you apart from something that you love, just remember, you've got another family over here, and it sure tastes good. And that's this week's Above the Char. Hey, if you're like Nate and you have a pressing issue that you want to hit me up with for Above the Char, hit me up on fredminnick.com. That's fredminnick.com. And hit me up with your idea. Until next week, cheers.
From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixirs Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at whiskeyambitions.com. From Jim Beam to Maker's Mark, their brand and label are the only things more iconic than a bourbon's taste. And that's why we've partnered with Sticker Mountain, a company focused on helping you make a statement with your labels and stickers. Embracing cutting-edge embellishment technology allows them to add foil, raise texture, and more to make your product stand out, all at competitive prices with market-leading turnaround and customer service that treats you like a business partner. And that's why right now you can get 10% off your order with coupon code STICKYBOURBON at StickerMountain.com. See the difference they can make for you and your business at StickerMountain.com using coupon code STICKYBOURBON. It's that time of the year where everybody's starting to make their vacation plans on visiting Kentucky, the mecca of bourbon. And if you are coming to Kentucky, you need to make sure you visit us at Pursuit Spirits in Louisville. We're right in the heart of Clifton, near Butchertown and Nulu, and only just a few miles away from downtown Louisville. But when you do come, you need to book your experience to go do our whole shebang. This is the one that's really the star of the show. You get a full-on tasting, you get to do your own personal barrel selection experience, and you get to grab a whiskey thief and fill your bottle directly from the barrel. We're doing something completely brand new that nobody else is doing here in bourbon country. Plus, you get a free sweet tasting glass at the end of it. I guarantee you, you're going to end up being one of the many people that's also leaving us a 5-star review. So make sure you come and check us out. You can book your reservation by going to pursuitspirits.com and clicking the Visit Us button.
It's that time again to get bourbon strong with Give270. Purchase your $50 tickets for your chance to win from our 50 bourbon prizes. Don't miss out on rare bottles and grand prizes like the legendary Pappy Set, a Weller Rainbow, and the Blood Oath Trilogy. Hurry, only 3,000 tickets are available. Single bottle winners go back in for the grand prize draw. Will you win the ultimate Pappy Set or one of our other incredible prizes? Get your tickets now at Give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 0002703.
Welcome back to the episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. Kenny and Ryan making our way down to Nashville this time, talking to somebody that is, you know, I think I got introduced to Belle Mead years ago. And I remember, I think it might have been actually talking to our guest brother at Bourbon and Beyond the rain out year. It was in the tent. Yep. And I remember tasting a bunch of their stuff there. And I was like, oh, shit, we got to get them on the podcast soon.
I know, it's coming back to me now. Yeah, we were in the media tent and it was like, the Noah's Ark flood was going on.
Yeah.
And
terrible.
And everybody was like curled in this tent. And yeah, it was the first time I ever had the bell meat. I think it was the cash drink. It was at the Bardstown Bourbon Company. And I was like, you know what? I've never had that nitro. I was like, damn, it's good, you know. And then we're not in Nashville or in Louisville, so it's not like, I mean, there's some bell meat up there, but it's not like we don't get the special releases
That's true.
So yeah, I'm really excited to be here. And I met Charlie on a happy hour we did with Dallas Bourbon Club, and I was like, it's like, man, he'll be good for the podcast.
So what we say, we like to bring people on. You ask them one question, they just talk for 30 minutes. That's what we want to hear.
All right, so go. No.
Welcome. I'm glad y'all are here.
Yeah, we're happy to be here. It's got a beautiful place here. It's awesome.
So you've heard his voice. Now let's go ahead and introduce him. So today on the show, we have Charlie Nelson. He is one of the co-founders of Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery here in Nashville, Tennessee, which you probably know because you've seen the Bell Mead whiskey line at some point. So Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. And hey, long time listener,
first time caller.
whatever this is.
Yeah.
So as I'd mentioned before we started recording, we kind of start the show off with some random icebreaker. And so yours,
sorry,
is,
in advance.
This is a good one. What was the best Halloween costume you've ever worn?
Oh wow. man, this is kind of ridiculous.
He has a good one.
You know, I like to play basketball, and when I would like play pickup basketball, people would make fun of me. They'd call me Roethlisberger, and
you kind of look like.
So I was like, I was like, golly, I'm a Titans fan. Roethlisberger, you know, like I don't like the guy, and then I was like, all right, fine. I'm just going to embrace it. I'm going to be Ben Roethlisberger for Halloween. I go to Goodwill. I get like a Steelers, you know, Super Bowl championship t-shirt. And I get I take a Sharpie and write Roethlisberger on the back. And I think I can't remember what number he is, but I think he's like
7 or something.
Okay. So I wrote a 9.
Or maybe it's 9. I don't know.
Whatever it was, I wrote the wrong number. And
on purpose?
On accident. And then I had to like scratch it out and write the right number. And I cut off the sleeves and had a Titans long sleeve shirt on underneath. And I went downtown Broadway, downtown Nashville that night. And all of a sudden, people started cheering me. As I'm walking down Broadway, Steelers fans are insane. They're everywhere.
They're carrying their terrible towel, like, "Whoa, there's Ben. This kid's autograph."
Yeah, and then there's some. I don't know if I could share some of the things that were said during that day, but
you can. It's fine with me. We're rated explicit, so go for it.
I don't know, man. So this was around the time that, or like. I guess, you know, Roethlisberger doesn't have the cleanest
of records.
He always puts himself in the news somehow.
And so there were some people that just said some off-color things. Anyway, so I've just never gotten cheered walking down Broadway, and that was kind of fun.
But maybe after this you will.
Like, that guy from Bourbon Pursuit, right? I hear his voice somewhere.
What about you, Ryan? Have you ever had the best Halloween costume for you?
I'm trying to think. I had one that I thought it was kind of funny. It was like I had this big yellow rain suit, and I was like, from when I was working on the golf course, and it was like one of those like fisherman ones. I was like, well, why don't I be the Gorton's fish stick guy or something? I don't know. And I thought it was so stupid, but people loved it. They were like, you're the fish stick dude. And I don't know. That's the only one that pops up in my head. It's probably not that cool. It's not like being Big Ben and getting hoot and hollered at, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about you?
For me, so I'm going to have to cheat a little bit because this was something that, so for senior year back at school, you'd always have like senior dress up day and you just kind of like dress as like whatever. And you just had that. And so I dressed as Quail Man from Doug. Mm. If you remember that.
Underwear
outside the shorts. You had like a belt wrapped around your head and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, it won best costume of the day. So like I said, that was one of my favorite ones.
Doug.
Yeah.
I know anything in those old Nickelodeon things, man. They just
Patty.
What are you losers doing?
Banging on a trash can.
I need to jump on that street show bike. Again. Oh, I bet I could watch. You know, it's like I found Boy Meets World on Disney Plus, and I was like, gosh, I love it. Now I need to just find Doug again to watch that over.
Oh man,
it's due for a reboot.
In college, I had some friends who were like friends with Topanga.
Oh gosh,
like, actual friends.
Yeah,
oh,
like
wow.
It's like, oh my gosh, when
Can bring her over.
Yeah.
We never. What are you waiting for? Yeah.
Play beer pong with her.
Oh, man. That's awesome. So let's go ahead and we'll kind of switch gears and start talking about whiskey now. I think that's why people are here.
Really? I think this is much better.
Well, I mean, I'm kidding. We can talk about
talk about whiskey all the time.
Yeah, let's
talk about Doug.
Yeah. I want to talk about Topanga some more.
Who did you like Corey or would you not like Corey?
Oh, I was a Corey fan.
You were a Corey fan?
I like Corey. Yeah.
What was his best friend's name? Always wore the leather jacket.
Oh, Sean.
Sean.
Yeah.
That's right.
And yep. I loved Mr. Feeney. I don't know. He cracked me up always.
Well, he's the wise man.
Yeah.
He's like Al from Tool Time, right?
That's right.
See, we're gonna keep going too far.
Yeah. See.
So let's,
all right, to whiskey.
Yeah. Let's talk about whiskey. All right. So kind of talk about you and your brother, the idea, everything. Kind of like, how did this journey begin for you all?
Yeah. Well, it's a long story, but it all started when we went with our dad to buy a quarter of a cow worth of meat from a butcher.
That's how any good story
goes. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I still had a semester of college left. And
where'd you go, by the way?
I went to Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So my dream was to go play basketball for UCLA and then for the Lakers. I gave up on that dream in like eighth grade when I realized that just
wasn't gonna happen.
Yeah. And then my college counselor was like, UCLA is great, but you don't have any chance of getting in unless you are going to get an athletic scholarship. Probably not going to happen, or you've got like a 4.0 GPA. And so I didn't have that. So anyway, went to Loyola Marymount University and I had a semester left. I had gotten a grant to study like cave paintings, like Paleolithic cave paintings in Spain, Italy, and France. And,
wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and so the grant was for like $2,000, and that barely got me a plane ticket there. And
say, you're like, thanks a lot.
Yeah. So I wanted to go for 2 months, and that just wasn't going to be enough. So I came back to Nashville to work, and while I was working in Nashville, my dad had gone in with three of his buddies to buy a cow worth of meat from this butcher in Greenbrier, Tennessee, about 20 miles north from here. And he asks my brother and I if we wanted to go with him. And we're like, yeah, sure. You know, why not? Hey, that sounds fun, I guess. So we're on our way to this butcher and we stop to fill up because we were running low on fuel. And we stop at this Citgo station. And at the corner of the station, there's this historical marker that says Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery. 1 mile east on Long Branch Road, Charles Nelson opens the Greenbrier Distillery. Like, holy shit, what is this? You know, my name's Charles Nelson. And, you know, at first it didn't really, it was like, well, there are a lot of Charles Nelsons in the world, probably. And so anyway, you know, we go on to the butcher who happens to live about a mile east. When we get there, we ask him if he knows anything about the old distillery. And his name was Chuck Grissom. He was amazing. I actually just randomly a couple weeks ago, someone was like, oh my gosh, Chuck Grissom was my cousin. I'm like, what? So we get there and we ask him if he knows anything about the old distillery. He's like, well, hell, you know, look across the street. So we walk across the street. There's this old barrel warehouse still standing. The original spring is still running. We go and drink from the spring, and then he sends us to a nearby historical society where there were two original bottles of our Greenbrier, Tennessee whiskey with our name on them. And my brother and I just look at each other, and, you know, like literally every hair on my body stood up. And it was like one of the only moments of clarity in my life. And, you know, it was just like, man, this is what we're here to do.
The sign was literally a sign.
Yeah, yeah. And the funny thing is, this is kind of silly, but I had the year before I had like studied abroad in Paris and then traveled around Southeast Asia, and I was reading like a bunch of different books, and one book that I was reading was all about like reading the signs and like, you know, not actual signs, but like, you know, trying to follow like energy
intuition
and stuff like
yeah,
that sort of thing. And then, you know,
you saw the chakra around the sun. Yeah. You're like, this is it. It's for me.
Yeah. So when we saw those bottles, like Andy and I were just like, holy shit, this is like, neither of us really knew what we wanted to do in life. And, you know, I still had a semester of college left. He was just fresh out of college and he was like an interning at the Country Music Association, and Yeah. So we're just like, this is it. And at the time there, you know, were only maybe a dozen distilleries in the country making whiskey, at least that we knew of. And there were only two in Tennessee that we knew of, Jack and George. And so we're like, well, there's definitely room for us. There's no doubt about that. Why has this not happened before? And our great uncle, apparently he and another cousin of his back in the 80s talked about trying to resurrect the company, but they were both like, you know, had their own careers and were very successful and everything. And it was just like, the laws back then were a lot more difficult to change. And
yeah, didn't Tennessee have some crazy, like only two distilleries? You said the two, they could be the only ones that there's no new distilleries could be opened or.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was only legal in three counties.
Okay. Yeah.
Lincoln, Coffee, and Moore County. And then, you know, of course, Pritchard's opened up in, I think in Lincoln County. And then I think Dickel and Jack were in Moore and Coffee. And then actually, this was then during the recession, Perry County, not many people knew that Perry County opened up. They actually passed, they were the most depressed county in the state. And so they passed a law. They were the fourth county to legally be able to, distill in, and they kind of like rolled out the red carpet for us and wanted us to come and build a distillery there. But, you know, we wanted to do it either in the original county or in, which was Robertson County, or in Nashville. And so we were getting prepared to like do a referendum and like try and get a bunch of signatures and go around door to door because that's what you had to do. And then we heard about this effort by, you know, folks like, you know, Derek Bell and Jim Massey and, you know, Mike Williams and a number of other folks here in Nashville who were leading an effort to change the law to open, like, novel idea, change the law. Hey, you know.
We need commerce.
Yeah. And so we're like, well, hell yeah. Then we could maybe do it in Nashville. And, you know, we still want to get back to Robertson County as well. But that effort succeeded in 2009, I believe. And we actually officially reformed our company in 2009, which was exactly 100 years after my family's distillery shut down, which was 1909.
Wow. Another son.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I caught that. So it was actually part of your family, like lineage, that distillery.
Yeah. It's great. Yeah. Uncle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, so it was my great 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 grandfather, triple great grandfather, Charles Nelson. And so it's actually a fascinating history of how.
Thank God they didn't give you a different name. You'd be like, well,
that's just Nelson. Yeah. This son didn't turn out so well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what if it said Andy Nelson instead? Would y'all have still done it?
Well, I guess then Andy would probably be right here today, yeah, instead, yeah, of me. No, Andy just couldn't make it today. But yeah, it's funny, like. In my family, you know, either there's a pretty good chance you're either named Charles or William. So the original Charles Nelson, he came over from Germany in 1850, and his real name, well, his German name was Carl Wilhelm Dietrich Nelson. And so when he got to America, it just became Charles Nelson.
Yeah, we
got to
shorten that up, yeah, a little bit. Cut that middle part out.
And so his firstborn son was Charles, and his secondborn son was William. So it's like, you're supposed to, I guess, name, like my first, I don't have any kids, but if I had a son, I would be supposed to name him Charles, then my secondborn, William. And then my brother, his first name is William. His firstborn son would be named William, and his second, Charles. So it would get
that
really,
would be really confusing at Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully your wife or significant other is on board with that. Yeah. Like, sorry, you don't get to choose the name.
Yeah.
My fiance, yeah, she's Cuban, and so she might be trying to pitch Carlos.
I like it. That's still good. So now we're in 2009, 2010. What's the next step? Is it let's go ahead and build a distillery? Is it let's source? Like, what's the thought process here? Like, when you try to put a business plan?
Yeah. So actually, when we discovered it, it was 2006. And that's when we started working on a business plan and trying to raise money and going around to all the distilleries in Tennessee and Kentucky and, you know, meeting with a lot of these guys who you've probably had on the show and some legends. And, you know, everybody was so nice and helpful and willing to give advice and guidance. And, you know, we had no idea what we were doing, but we knew that we needed to bring somebody out to, you know, be an expert and to help us, you know, at least teach us what we didn't know. So we ended up going around for, you know, we spent a couple of years in state archives and county archives learning about the history of our family's distillery and just like history of distilling and, you know, in relation to Tennessee and Tennessee whiskey and doing a lot of research on our family's history. And then we went searching for an expert and we narrowed it down to two people, Lincoln Henderson and Dave Pickerel. And
two great people. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so Lincoln, you know, he and my dad were, you know, buds and got along really well. And, I mean, they weren't like best friends or anything, but they were, you know, they were talking a lot. And so, you know, Lincoln ultimately said, "Hey guys, you know, I love what you're doing. Love to help out." And he was spending a lot of time in Japan, working on some Japanese whiskeys and also doing stuff with Brown-Forman. And anyway, he said, "But you know, I'm thinking about starting this thing with my son, so I'm probably not going to be able to you know help out too much, but happy to do a little bit what I can." And he did provide some really good guidance, and obviously that turned into Angel's Envy. And then you know, Dave, we love Dave. He had just left Maker's Mark, and he was maybe consulting with one other company at the time, and so he had the full picture. You know, he knew he could. You know, being a chemical engineer, he could talk like, you know, he could make you understand a complex subject, but speak, you know, in layman's terms. And we loved that. And so, you know, we spent a lot of time with Dave and we tried to sign him up full time and we had enough money to pay him for 3 months. And, you know, I was like, man, so now comes the fundraising time. And I was like, man, we know some people with some money, like that shouldn't be a problem. We'll be able to raise a few million dollars in 3 months, no problem. And about 2.5 years later, we hadn't raised a penny.
Gosh.
And so, you know, I was living with my parents and like, you know, literally like trying to search through saved up coin jars and stuff like that to buy like ramen noodles and peanut butter and jelly.
Cleaning out the couch for quarters.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you're in. It's definitely, it was a different climate back then when, yeah, nobody knew the boom that would happen in 2013 timeframe. So,
I mean, it was a huge gamble.
And nobody knew the industry. I mean, it was like, you want to start a whiskey business? Yeah, good luck. It's not healthcare. It's not technology. Like, sorry, I don't know that business. And good luck. You know, great story, good history, good luck. And so anyway, you know, Dave was like, after 3 months, he was like, "Guys, I'd love to continue helping you out and I will because I believe in you, but I've got to take on other clients." And we're like, okay, totally understand, you know. And during that time, he still helped us refine the business plan. And like, there was one potential investor, like, you know, you're how old are you? At the time I was probably like 25 or 26 or something. And he was like, "Yeah, I think for a CEO, we need someone a little bit more experienced." So Dave was like, "Look, I'll play the role or have the title of CEO if it appeases that investor and he's able to bring it in. But, you know, you're going to be the one running the show. So you and your brother." Anyway, that didn't end up working out. But, the way that we got started was initially our plan was to raise several million dollars, build out the whole distillery, hopefully on the original property, start laying down barrels of our Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey and not sell anything until they were aged for a few years. And, you know, nobody.
Investors were like, "Yeah, good luck."
Yeah. They're like, "So you're telling me you want me to invest, you know, millions of dollars and not start generating any revenue for at least a couple of years?"
Solid business.
Yeah.
Next. Thank you. Next.
Yeah. So that's when we started. Dave told us about the fact that we didn't have to start distilling on our own right away. And we met a few brokers. And, you know, during the time in which we were doing a lot of research, we found that Bell Mead was one of 30 labels that Charles Nelson, my triple great grandfather, produced. And that out of those 30 labels, there were a handful that he produced in conjunction with other companies. Bell Mead was one of those. So like everything we do, we're trying to keep in line with the history of the original. And so that's why we came out with Bell Mead first. And so it was kind of crazy. Like the way that it happened, like we would actually have brokers come to my parents' house with like a briefcase full of barrel samples. Like this doesn't
like traveling barrels. Salesmen.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like seriously, this does not happen anymore.
No.
And over the course of like a year, this is in, I don't know, like 09, something like that. It's hard to remember the years. They kind of all blend together, but
yeah. It's been a little bit of a rocket ride, haven't you?
Yeah. So. but yeah, so we would taste different barrel samples from different distilleries, different mash bills, different yeast strains at different ages. Start at cask strength and then, you know, start diluting them down, rate our favorite barrels. You know, we started off doing like 10 or 12 in a day. And then you know, we'd start off in the morning on like a Saturday or Sunday or Friday or Wednesday.
whatever ends in Y.
Whatever day.
But so then we were like, okay, that's too many to really, like at the end of it, we'd just be drunk and our palates would be shot. So we'd start limiting it to like 5 or 6. And, you know, my brother and I don't tend to agree on most things, but when we do, I think it's kind of a beautiful thing. And we finally agreed on what the blend would be for Bell Mead. And it came down to two things. We actually really liked a blend that was coming from another distillery. And we were like, okay, it's between that and the blend that was coming from LDI at the time, now MGP. And it was just like a coin toss. And then we found out that the blend from the other distillery, which they're you know, similar taste profiles, they said that if we were going to use that, we would have to blend in, like, I think at least 40 or 50% from another source. And we're like, oh, well, we spent all this time, you know, not knowing this.
So, the beginning.
So then we chose the LDI blend and loved it. And, you know, we were super excited about it. And we sold our first bottle in March of 2012. And the way that we bought those barrels was basically my family and I, we put up literally everything that we owned to personally guarantee a loan to buy a batch of barrels. And it was basically my parents' house was the most valuable thing that we collectively own. And that allowed us to buy some barrels, then buy some more barrels, rate them. Once we sold our first bottle in March of 2012.
How big was the first batch?
Four barrels. I mean, we bought more, but the recipe was based on a four barrel blend and really still is today. But yeah, so then we were able to raise some money and build out this place, which we opened to the public in 2014. Our first date of distillation was actually August 11th of 2014. Which
is that today? I don't even know what day it is. Or I guess we can't talk about the day.
Well, we can. The day of this recording is August 11th, the day of this recording. Happy anniversary.
Yeah,
no wonder you're ready to drink. Congratulations.
The first barrel that we laid down was August 14th of 2020, though. But and then opened our doors to the public November 23rd. And, you know, then sold our first bottle of our Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey October 1st of 2019. So that's the brand that we set out to produce. And it only took us 13 years to get to the starting line.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it though, you know, Bell Mead has had a lot of success, right? I mean, it's had a lot of success, especially in the bourbon geek world. Do you see that? I mean, do you consider that your flagship, or do you consider the Nelson's Tennessee whiskey to kind of be that? Like, where do you want to see these brands go?
Yeah, so our Nelson's Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey was one of the largest and most popular brands in the country prior to Prohibition. So like in 1885, we were selling like 380,000 cases a year.
Wow. That's a lot for back then.
Yeah, that's like 2 million bottles a year.
Yeah, I mean, for anybody that doesn't know, like that's what like Maker's Mark was doing like when they were getting ready to start really getting big in like 2012, 2013 timeframe. So
yeah. So we were by far the largest distillery in Tennessee prior to Prohibition. And that brand, the Nelson's Greenbrier brand, was the flagship. Belle Meade was kind of a smaller brand. And you know, Belle Meade was always meant, initially, it was meant to be a bridge to get us to Greenbrier. And, you know, it's been a beautiful, nice, delicious brand. And, you know, our plan is to keep it going, and we love it. But the focus is on the Nelson's Greenbrier brand. And you know, like I said, we had about 30 different labels back in the day. We had multiple Tennessee whiskeys, multiple bourbons, corn whiskeys, rye whiskeys, a malt whiskey, apple brandy, peach brandy, even gin. We actually bottled one of the first American gins. You know, in the other room there, I can show you some of them. We've got a bunch of those bottles, but
I kind of want to talk about the labels there for a second,
yeah.
Because talk about what it is to like go and dig into the archives when it comes to actually like getting the label. Does something like that, like, did it go defunct? Did you have to like reapply for it?
If you're anything like me, then you can't get enough about bourbon. And that's why I'm a subscriber to Bourbon Plus magazine. Bourbon Plus is a quarterly publication that tells the stories from the heart of bourbon. The farmers who grow the grain, the distillers who labor over the process, and the people, like you and me, who raise their glasses to celebrate it all. Subscribe to Bourbon Plus magazine today at bourbonplus.com, that's P-L-U-S.com, and use code PURSUIT at checkout for $5 off your subscription. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And you can get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/bourbon.
When it comes to actually like getting the label, does something like that, like, did it go defunct? Did you have to like reapply for it? Like, was the trademark lost? Like, was it still in the family? Like, how did you navigate?
DSP? Did you get the same DSP, or how's that work?
Yes. Okay. So there's a few questions.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to throw that in at the end.
Okay. So it'll help to go back a little bit, the history of Belle Meade bourbon. So it was Charles Nelson, you know, had one of the largest distilleries in the state, by far the largest in the state, one of the largest in the country. And he was one of the first to bottle and sell whiskey rather than selling it by the barrel or the jug. So he had a lot more warehousing and bottling capabilities than most people in the state of Tennessee at the time. So there was another distillery, the Belle Meade Distillery, that was owned by the Sperry Wade and Company. And they distilled Belle Meade, and Charles Nelson aged and bottled it. In the 1880s, I believe, the Belle Meade distillery burned, and that's when Charles took on more production of Belle Meade.
There you go. Good little history lesson.
And, yeah. And there's the family from, like, Alton Wade Kelly. He's a descendant of the Wade part of Watson Wade, who was one of the proprietors there. So I found that we sold Belle Meade from an old price list that had a bunch of different brands that we sold. And we ultimately found, like, this old newspaper article. We've got it framed in the tasting room from May 1st, 1885. That's an ad for Belle Meade, and it's got the label on it and everything, which is almost identical to the label that we use today. And so that's how we use that. Now, as far as the DSP number goes, back in the day, we were known as Old Number Five because we were registered distillery number five. And we've got, you know, a list of all the registered distilleries in the country and, you know, specifically a page from the list of the registered distilleries in the state of Tennessee. And the federal government recognized that fact and gave us an historic designation of DSP, Distilled Spirits Plant, TN, Tennessee 5. So, you know, we're very proud of that. And
that's very cool.
We put that on our bottle, like embossed on the back of our bottle there and on the punt of the bottle. And
it's something to be very proud of. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're in early, right? I mean, you got a low number.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. There's nothing sexier than like a 6-digit. You know, DSP.
150321.
Exactly.
So that's my luggage combination. Yeah. So I guess the one thing that I didn't also, you know, with the 30 different labels, you know, how, when you had to go to the archives, I mean, I know I said Bellmead as an example, but like, did you find that, you know, these labels were like, they had passed any kind of like ownership or anything like that? And like you had to like reapply for it, or like, was it still in the family? Like, how did that work?
Yeah. So we had to reapply for it. After a certain amount of time passes and they're not, it may be as short as like 3 or 5 years, if it's not used in commerce and you're not reapplying for it, then the trademark status dies and you're not fighting to defend it anymore, then somebody else can come in. And those trademarks were, you know, nobody had them. So
fingers crossed.
Yeah.
We have 30 more to apply for.
Yeah.
So. No cease and desist yet.
Right? Yeah. Right. Exactly.
So talk about the Greenbrier. You said your focus is going to be on the Nelson Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey.
Yeah.
Did you have recipes from back then that you were able to dig up? And is it like similar to that, or is it like your own thing?
Yeah. So we've actually got at least, you know, multiple recipes from back in the day. And so this one is based on, you know, one of those original recipes. So we found a couple newspaper, and actually most of what we've found is from old newspaper articles. And back in the day at the distillery, the 4th of July was a big deal because Charles Nelson was born on the 4th of July, 1835. And every year there'd be big celebrations at the distillery. There were articles written about the distillery all the time, and there would be tours at the distillery. And it also talked about like the bands that would play. And I think there was like Beck's beer that was served.
That's cool.
Yeah. And talk about like the silverware, the serving platters. Anyway.
It's like a Gatsby moment. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It really was. So they, Mr. Gosh, I'm blanking on his name right now.
Let's call him Mr. Y.
Yeah,
Mr. Y.
Oh, gosh, I'm totally blanking right now. Anyway, the head of production, he was giving a tour to a bunch of people, and there was a journalist on the tour, and he went through the whole process. First, we grind up 103 bushels of wheat and cook it to 212 degrees. Then we cool it down and add in 28 bushels of wheat and so on and so forth, and went through the whole process step by step. And they wrote
because
it down.
Somebody documented it.
Yeah. And so wrote it down and published it the next day. And then there was another article that was published that was like, a visit to the prosperous concern of Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, where they mash twice daily using, you know, X bushels of corn, rye, Y bushels of wheat, and Z bushels of rye, and A bushels of barley, you know, a day. And so we were like, okay. So, you know, first when we saw that we had a wheated mash bill, we were like, oh, that's crazy. Then we learned that Robertson County, Tennessee, grew a lot of corn and a lot of wheat back in the day. And then we also found like a 4-grain mash bill. And, you know, there's like articles of them getting in rye that I think was like coming through Chicago or something. I don't know.
It's a lot of things to start digging in the archives.
Yeah.
So when you get all these recipes and you're like, all right, Dave, I got all these recipes that my grandpa made. What do you think of them? What does he think of them when they?
He was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Let's do it. And he was like, this is not that surprising, because he was like, this is not dissimilar from other mash bills that I've seen. And he was like, back then, there wasn't a ton of creativity in terms of mash bills that, like...
So you didn't get the Mouvet Jerry cask from, like, or a Honey Barrel from News Clippings? Yeah.
Well, you know, something that we love to do is, like, Charles Nelson was kind of a man ahead of his time, and so we like to try and be innovative in some ways, but no, there was... No mention of any honey barrels, or at least not finishing in honey or Mourvèdre casks. But yeah, it was interesting because, like, I guess a lot of people used similar mash bills back then, and probably same today.
Yeah, I mean, I guess another question is, were you able to find an old bottle or something like that, and then have, because, I mean, we hear about all the time, they're like, you know, I've got an old brand I want to start up, and I found this old bottle in my grandma's closet, and I found out it was my great-grandfather's, and now I take it to, you know, Peggy No Stevens or somebody else, and they try to, you know, dissect.
Decipher what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. In just maybe 150 feet from us, we've got some of those original bottles. I've probably got about 30 or 40 of them. Some of the original Tennessee whiskey. Some rye from 1899 that's 126 proof. Wow. And we've got some, what we think may be that gin. We've got some fortified wine.
You think it's gin. Yeah. Hopefully you think it's gin.
And we've got some apple brandy. Yeah, so we have a bunch of original bottles, but we haven't tried them yet.
I was about to say, you don't open them like every 4th of July, like in celebration?
Well, we need to. We've opened one of the bottles of Angelica wine because it was just easy to open, and it tasted like a, you know, fine port, basically. And I actually talked with John Troia from Tempest Fugit Spirits about it, and he thinks that it probably would have been more bitter, like a Fernet back in the day, but that bitterness, like, probably broke down and turned into, you know, sweet.
From the oxidizing or whatever goes on in the bottles.
Whatever goes on there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I do want to talk about some of the stuff that you had poured for us here. So yeah. I want to start with the left, which was the single barrel, right? I think this was...
It was funny when we were... Before he was like, "This is my favorite barrel," and then the next one, "Well, this was my favorite barrel."
Well, I also said that I don't live in a quality binary world.
No, but I'm the same way. Yeah.
They're all my favorite.
Yeah. So kind of talk about, you know, the idea behind, you know, some of the releases, the different finishes, single barrels, cask strength, you know, regular offering. Like, kind of talk about, you know, the thought process of building the Bellmeat brand.
Yeah. So when we first started and like sourcing was not like well known, and we were doing two different mash bills and two different yeast strains, and people, like, you know, were giving us a lot, like, and we were pretty open and transparent about that we were sourcing and everything, and we lost out on a lot of sales, and then sourcing became a lot more well known. And then it was like,
now everybody's like, if it's not MGP, I don't want it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we were like, well, how can we do something that, like, we already are putting our own sort of touch on it by using the two different mash bills and two different yeast strains, but how can we go beyond that? And that's when we started looking to, like, Scotch and, you know, their use of sherry casks. And so that's our first foray into sort of experimentation was with sherry casks. Then we got some cognac casks and then some Madeira casks. And then we were like, well, let's go a little bit further and let's do some other crazy stuff. Then the owner of the Withers Winery is a friend and he likes Bellmeat bourbon. And so we got some Mourvèdre casks from him.
I don't even know what Mourvèdre is.
It's a wine.
Like a wine. Yeah.
Okay. Apparently.
It's apparently, you know, like a blend.
It's not
of
for
like,
the peasants.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't pronounce it. Yeah.
This.
I struggle on Grigio.
So. This accent aigu lens, it's like adds $50 to the bottle. Right. Exactly. There.
But this first single barrel, this is amazing.
Yeah.
You talk about,
I almost get like coconut off of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This one's crazy. So.
No, that's a fantastic barrel. And I guess, you know, we all know that getting into the sourcing game, it's tough, right? I mean, it's very capital, very intensive business. I mean, do you all see, now that you kind of like, you know, you kind of see like on the horizon what's happening with the, you know, the Nelson's Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey. Do you feel like you're going to start sunsetting a little bit of the Bell Mead, like not putting an emphasis on it? Like, where's your head there?
Yeah, I mean, the focus from the very beginning was, while we're, you know, we love that we've been able to get some great success with Bell Mead, the focus has always been and will probably always be on our Nelson's Greenbrier brand. That was the brand, like, we had no intention of being, of building like a small brand and a small distillery. Like, we didn't even know that those existed. And they didn't really when we first started on it. Like, the smallest distillery that we visited when we were first trying to learn about this business was like Dickel, you know, and that's not that it's small not, of a distillery. No, and we were very, like, very large. We were like, well, we could just build a small distillery like that. Yeah. You know, thinking back to that, we're like, yeah, and now we're sitting in something like what we
yeah,
put
we'll
out
build in that big in that in the middle of Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah. Sell it now and get your property values
yeah,
back.
Yeah, right. So like we got into the business to we wanted to become the biggest Tennessee whiskey again, or at least the second biggest, you know?
Or third,
you know,
even third.
I think you'll be happy
good.
With third.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a pretty good chunk of the pie yeah, there. You yeah. can't really say bad about third.
Times have changed a little bit since 2006, but you know,
so what do you say to you know a lot of the fans out there that are, you know, Bell Mead diehards and big fans? You know, like go down, stock up. Like is that your advice?
I mean, I think it's always a good idea to buy more Bell Mead bourbon. You know,
definitely. No matter what the future holds,
all the time, every time, anytime. Hey, go on, get you some.
You can never have enough.
Yeah, we're always trying to put out a good quality product at a reasonable price, and whether it's under the Bell Mead brand or the Nelson's Greenbrier brand, or future brands that are yet to be launched. And so, like, we want to continue to put out products that we love and that have some sort of historical significance in all likelihood, because most everything that we do, we take some inspiration from the past. And so, yeah, I mean, I would say for the fans, the folks that are big fans of Bell Mead bourbon, to keep an eye out on the Nelson's Greenbrier brand too. It's only, you know, in limited distribution, mostly in Tennessee and like Kentucky, South Carolina. But Bell Mead is, you know, we started out the year with the goal of launching Bell Mead bourbon in all 50 states. So
that's a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were already in like 30. So we had a, or I don't know, 20 something. So, you know, we did a lot of virtual launches, but yeah, I mean, we're not in all 50 states quite yet, but we will be very soon. So,
well, I mean, I would say this, Mavadre, I can't say it. It's delicious.
I don't know.
It's delicious.
Mavadre.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever.
Say what you want. But no, there is one here in the lineup that we got to talk about, because this is, it broke the internet for a little bit, and that's this honey cask. This honey cask. Like, talk about the idea of the honey cask, and then did you ever see, like, the writing on the wall that somebody, that they're like, this is going to be huge? Like, and because, just talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, the honey cask was just kind of, like I said, we like to play around a little bit, and, you know, some of our production crew every year does something for, like, the National Honey Spirits Summit, which actually didn't really have much to do with the honey cask, but we love honey. Like, honey's delicious.
Who doesn't?
Put in everything.
Yeah, especially like
chicken nuggets.
Yeah. Especially chicken nuggets. Yeah. Anyway, you know, a lot of folks reach out to us all the time about buying or, you know, procuring our barrels to age their beer or coffee or honey or hot sauce or whatever. And we like to work with folks that are putting out really great products that we love. And True Bee Honey, it's another local company to Middle Tennessee. They make amazing honey. And so they wanted to age some of their honey in some of our barrels. And we're like, oh, cool. Yeah, we'd love to, you know, do it. And we'd love to get some of that honey when you're done with it. And then they were done with it, and they're like, hey, would you guys like the barrel's back?
He's like, you want this back? I got to get rid of the trash. You want it back? Yeah.
And we were like, yeah, actually, that sounds really good. So we did. And we're like, well, let's throw some bourbon in there. And we did. And then we tasted it. And we're like, oh, that's pretty dang good. Let's bottle that up. And then, you know, love just like the horses on the label. And we like to play around with that. And so putting the bees on there was just kind of a fun thing. And we had no idea that there, we were like, kind of nervous that people would be like, really?
It's not really, it's not bourbon. It's not bourbon.
I'll have to say I was in that camp. I was like, there's no way it's good. I mean, come on, how gimmicky can you get?
Yeah.
And then one of my friends in the Dallas Bourbon Club, Brian Lowe, gave me a pour of it. And I was like, I wanted to not like it, but I was so blown away. I was like, gosh, this is really good.
It's really good.
It's like you can taste like almost the floral, like of, you know, the honey that, you know, the flowers that it came from the bees. It's,
yeah,
you know, there's so much floral notes and it's crazy.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's not like, it doesn't take on like a viscous flavor where you feel like you're like, you know, like really chewing honey. I mean, it's just very,
yeah, it's just
very,
got these
very balanced on it.
Yeah. You're not getting like pounded by the
honey. No, it's more like fruity and floral. Like, I don't know.
Just, yeah,
nectar wise. I don't know. I feel like if I'm a hummingbird, I would love this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I want to waste any of this on any hummingbirds, but
that's true.
I wouldn't.
But I bet they would love it.
Yeah.
They'd probably crash into the...
I can't get them to come to my house. So maybe that's what I need, a bottle of honey. Bellmead honey.
But I mean, this
I
was...
I get squirrels.
So. Yeah, we all get that. So, but this was also a bottle that on the secondary market, it was going for, I mean, it's asinine what it's going for, you know, like $400 or $500 a bottle. What are your thoughts on that? Are you like, oh, good for them? Or are you like, oh, shit, that was...
Yeah,
I mean, we actually knocked it out of the park.
I mean, it's nice to hear that, and it's like, oh, that's cool. But it's a double-edged sword, especially when like people get upset with you about not being able to get, or like waiting in line for a long time, and
because you had another release of it, and people were like camped out to try.
Yeah,
to it.
Yeah. So that which sucks, because like I, you know, we just don't think of ourselves, or like, we're happy if one person buys a bottle.
Right.
Like, you know, so we knew that this release of the honey cask, the last one that we did, was going to be popular. But, you know, we were like, we thought maybe 400 people max would show up. And the first people started showing up over 24 hours before the release. And we're like, what the hell?
Like, we're not selling Yeezys here.
This is crazy. And an hour before we opened, you know, there were like over 1,000 people lined up. And, you know, I think we had maybe like, I didn't even know how many bottles that we had, but it was like 600 or something like that. And we're like, oh God, this is not good. There's too many people here. So, and I was telling my friends, I was like, man, I mean, as long as you're here like around noon or something,
before lunch, you'll be fine.
You'll be able to get a bottle. And so they're like, man, fuck you, dude. Like, what the hell?
Totally screwed me out of my honey.
Yeah. And so there were a lot of people. And then there were people that got in line at like 8 a.m. that, you know, waited in line for, you know, I think that the line ended, I don't know, like 3 p.m. or something. And there were some people that waited starting at like 8 a.m. that didn't get bottles. And I felt so bad. And like, we were also raising money for tornado victim relief. And, you know, we were able to raise over $5,000 just from people here. And then we ended up donating, gosh, all told, I think we ended up donating over $50,000.
That's fantastic.
To local tornado relief, which was amazing. But, you know, a lot of that was in large part thanks to the show out at the honey release. And so that was great. But, you know, I hated seeing people waiting. It was a hot day, and like, or actually it was cold night, and then it got hot. I don't know, but the weather wasn't great. And so, you know, I was going around like handing out bottles of water and stuff. People were yelling at me, and like I was getting like threats, and it was
does
just
it
like,
make you want to do another release, or you kind of like,
just don't want to deal with
this anymore?
Yeah, after that, honestly, it was like, I mean, I love it because it's great, and the people that all get it love it. We've got to figure out how to do it better, and you know,
no good way. You're gonna have people mad no matter what.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah, and so, but yeah, it is a little discouraging at times when you get a bunch of nasty, you know, emails and direct messages on social media and letters and stuff, and people
still write letters.
Yeah, yeah.
Get up into the mail.
They're like, yeah. I'm really going to make a point.
We get actual hate mail.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter messages are a little bit more common. But yeah people actually do still write letters and postcards. And yeah.
It's hard for me just to find a stamp sometimes. Yeah. Well, I mean, dude, this was an awesome way to kind of sit down with you, learn more, especially about you, your family, the history. I know there's a lot here that I didn't know about, and I'm excited to really learn more. We're going to have you on again at some point in the future.
Yeah, I feel like we just scratched the surface.
I agree.
Yeah. What's going on here? So yeah.
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 We'll have to do it again on our next road trip back there. So
that. And then maybe you, like I said, you'll quit doing the honey thing so you don't piss any people off. And, but I mean, it's also, I think you also have that feel good about it. You're like, yeah, like we got something. We put it on the map.
Yeah.
Right.
So now you're calling the bee farmer, like, you got to age more honey.
I know. I wish they could.
Take all our empty barrels now.
I wish they could, but they're pretty small production. But it's been funny because now, like, people text me all the time. They're like, yo, this brand's doing the honey too now. And
people are doing it on their own too.
Yeah.
A lot of copycats out there. So,
So, you know, it feels good to be. Yeah. So, I guess copy is a compliment, you know? But yeah. And like seeing, it can be frustrating seeing, like, I've heard of it going on the secondary market for $2,000 or something like that. And on the one hand, I'm like, oh, awesome. But then I'm like, gosh. Feel bad, like if someone like paying
that much money for my bourbon.
Yeah, like we only charged like 150 or 20 or something. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, it's cool.
No, that's awesome. And again, thank you for coming on because this was great to understand your story, more about the products, more about Bell Mead, and you know the Nelson Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey, and really what the plans are for the future. Because I think that's something that people are always interested to kind of know about. You know. What are they interested in, and what's the future going to entail for them? And it's really great. So before we close it out, you know, give people a way that they can learn about more about, you know, you all, where they can follow you online, everything like that too.
Yeah. So, you can check out our website at greenbrierdistillery.com or ngbd.com. 4 letters that all sound like they could be other letters.
Four letter domains are rare. Yeah. So you got one.
So, N as in Nelson, G as in Green, B as in Briar, D as in distillery.com. Then NGB Distillery on Instagram or Nelson's Greenbrier for the brand. Then we've also got BellMeadBourbon.com. We've got too much stuff.
You've got all the web. And
there's no consolidation whatsoever. Just own all the web presence.
Yeah. Well, that's something that we've been talking a lot about is that should we consolidate and you know, focus more on, you know, one or.
Yeah. You can put on another label. Your social media team's like, God damn it. Yeah. Go register all the domains right now.
Like we've also got Louisa's Liqueur because. My triple great grandmother ran the distillery for the last 18 years. And that's another, you know, domain and another social media handle. We don't even have like one person can't manage all of the different domain names. Like I think you can only do 5 at a time. So we need to fix that.
That's awesome though. But again, thank you for coming on. It was a pleasure to talk to you. I mean, love the personality, the energy that you bring to this. You could tell there's a lot of passion behind it. And you know, it was literally a sign that was a sign that made you build this. And it's amazing to kind of see the journey that you've come on from your age of 25 and trying to start a business where people were kind of like, dude, you're crazy.
Yeah.
And now you're, you know, decade later, we got something here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to know that you risked it all and your parents were like, oh, we finally made it to a point, you know, we can chill out. And then they're like, well, got to put the house up for our son. So that's very awesome, you know, and I'm sure your triple great grandfather is like super proud of what y'all have done. So it's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We're excited and we hope that he's looking down and that he is proud. And every 4th of July, or actually every 3rd of July, the night before, we go and do a toast at his gravesite and pour some out.
You probably like pour honey this year.
Oh, man. Well, again, make sure you follow them on all the social media handles. If you can find them, I'm sure there'll be a list out there somewhere. Check the website first.
Yeah.
And then make sure you follow Bourbon Pursuit at all the socials as well. And if you like what you hear, make sure you leave us a review, comment on wherever you're watching or listening to this. And if you want to help support the show, want to be a part of our community, patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. With that, cheers, everybody, and we'll see you all next week.